Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, February 26th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, the filing deadline is fast approaching, so it's as good a time as any to discuss taxes and your finances. And with 2017's federal tax overhaul still playing out, there may be some surprises when filing. Here to help answer your questions are Judy Cahy and Jim Cole of BST, an advisory tax and accounting firm in Albany. To join the conversation, if you have a question, call now, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email your questions to voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Deductions, withholdings, 1040s, your calls, all coming up on Vox Pop right after this news update. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. The individual and corporate tax filing deadline of April 15th will be here before you know it. So if you haven't already, it's a good time to start thinking about your taxes and finances. In addition, 2017's federal tax overhaul could lead to some surprises when it comes to your returns or what you may owe the government. So today on the program, we have a pair of tax and financial experts in the studio to answer your questions. Help us sort through all of this. Judy Cahy is a tax partner at BST, an advisory tax and accounting firm in Albany. She is a certified public accountant with nearly 20 years of tax experience. Jim Cole is also a tax partner with BST. He has more than 25 years of public and private financial tax and accounting experience. If you have a question about taxes, great time to call is right now. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Or again, you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number, 800-348-2551. Judy Cahy, Jim Cole, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now, we did this last year, right?
A couple of months ago, yeah.
Was it? Yeah. It seems that way. And there was already some question about any possible changes to people's returns due to the 2017 federal tax overhaul. And obviously now we're in full swing with that. How busy have you been?
Pretty busy.
Yeah.
March 15th is a deadline as well for some of our business returns, so we're in full gear.
Are we getting a good handle on all the changes now?
Lots of explaining to do with clients. We have redesigned forms. We have new rules. We have changes in deductions and rates, so lots of conversations.
Jim, has it been the Armageddon some predicted it would be?
Oh, no. I mean, as I said, as a general rule, it cut huge amount in taxes. So overall, it generates savings. What people are seeing now with returns, though, is a little bit of unexpected in that they changed the withholding tables back in February. Mm-hmm. So people were getting more money in their paycheck. And they probably didn't notice that as much as when they go to do their tax return now and where they got a $1,000 refund last year, all of a sudden it's $600, and they're going, I thought I was supposed to save tax, now I'm paying more.
But isn't that sort of the goal, to have it work out to zero at the end of the year? In other words, the government not getting any of your money interest-free for a year?
Pure economics, absolutely. You know, but I'm a, you know, in fact, listening to the show before this and stuff, I'm a big believer in, you know, behavioral science, and most people will be much happier with a $500 refund than $10 a week extra pay.
Interesting. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Judy Cahy and Jim Cole are here from BST to answer your tax questions. Let's go over to Brian in Utica. Brian.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a question. I work for a company where I drive my own vehicle, and I'm paid 30 cents a mile for what I drive. And, you know, I keep track of that. So I think the federal government gives you 53.5 cents per mile or something. Can I get the difference?
Well, Brian, we have some bad news for you. One of the things that the Tax Act did is it eliminated the category of unreimbursed employee expenses. So yes, you're right. Historically, you know, there's a federal rate, which for 2018 is 54.5 cents. and you put it in that category on your itemized deductions, and you had to exceed a certain level to be able to deduct it. But now under these new rules, that deduction no longer exists. It's suspended until 2026.
Oh, that stinks. May I ask one more question? I know a lot of independent contractors who drive, and they keep track of their mileage. Would they be able to claim that?
So
and they get
presumably in the independent contractor world, they're 1099s and not employees as W-2s. So a different set of rules exist for them. They're likely maybe self-employed and reporting a Schedule C on their individual tax return. So it's still permissible in general to have business mileage. The category that was eliminated is in the individual context, in particular the unreimbursed employee expenses.
Well, you've answered my two questions. Thank you so much.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You very much, Brian. Our number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Judy Cahey is here. Jim Cole is here. If you have a tax question, now is the time to call. So in general, with the stopping of many of these deductions, has it made your lives easier or more difficult?
More difficult. New York State decoupled from the federal rules, so you can actually now itemize on your New York State return despite claiming the new enhanced standard deduction on your federal. So for those that don't know, the standard deduction was nearly doubled. Mm-hmm. So on a married filing joint return, that number is now $24,000. On a single return, it's $12,000. So you actually have a couple different sets of rules in play now.
Are a lot of people doing that, splitting?
It depends on the fact pattern. You need enough expenses to make it be worthwhile on the state.
So that really hasn't changed. I mean, you need... Those deductions have to hit a certain point or it's not worth taking them, really.
Right. Yeah, there's a threshold at the state level as well. And again, for your state deductions, you're not going to get to deduct your state income taxes. So the primary difference that plays out there is, you still get 100% of your real estate taxes on your state income tax return.
The number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. If you have a question about your taxes, and I see the lines are starting to load up here. So we'll give them a minute or two more before we head into the phones. It's 800-348-2551. So in general, you're seeing less refunds on those that you have prepared so far.
Yeah, quite honestly, most of our returns haven't been prepared. I mean, we're not doing a lot of the high-volume individual returns that are there. So what I'm seeing from there is stats that are coming out from the IRS.
Okay. The number here is 800-348-2551. Sandy in Rotterdam. Sandy, you're on. Hello, Sandy.
Yes.
You're on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you probably want to turn your radio down. There's a delay. You listen on the phone and then you'll be right with us.
I see. No, I'll just go to another room.
Oh, that's a good idea. All right.
There you go.
Okie doke.
Now, I was calling about the college savings programs that you can put money into for your children or grandchildren. And I was under the impression that you could deduct your up to a certain amount off of your gross income on your federal tax return. You can on your state, but... I thought you could on your federal also. Is it something that they've changed, or could you never deduct it off your federal?
Well, you couldn't. The deduction, the college savings plan, and it's at least in the New York program, you have to be in the New York state savings college plan, and you can deduct $5,000 or $10,000 on a joint return, and it only reduces your New York state taxable income. The feds have several, programs that are advantageous for college, whether it's the college tuition deduction, a college credit. But as far as just putting money away and saving for them, there's not a deduction at the federal level.
At the federal level. Okay. I did my taxes and I do my own, and I just kind of figured that was the way it was. But I just thought I'd ask an expert before I finalized it.
Well, thanks, Sandy. We appreciate the call.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Have a good one. Let's take a break here, Zach the engineer. The number is 800-348-2551. Taxes today. Some advice from Judy Cahey and Jim Cole. Back with more of your calls in a moment. Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is the number. Ray Graff with you, and joined today by Judy Cahey and Jim Cole of BST, an advisory tax and accounting firm in Albany. You got a tax question, this is the time. And a couple of emails here before we jump back to the phones. This one's from Larry. Larry writes, I bought a farm tractor and didn't pay sales tax in 2015. Just got a bill with substantial penalties on tax. Is there anything I can do to reduce the tax? And that's from Larry.
That's difficult. I mean, the premise of sales and use taxes, it's on the property you buy, and absolutely an item like that would be taxable. To get certainly the taxes due, to get the penalties abated, he could try. But certainly the tax and the interest are certainly something that you couldn't get abated.
How can you buy a tractor tax-free?
I'm guessing out of state and then brought it in.
Okay. This one is from Michael, who writes, I recently converted my DBA to an S Corp. How does the profit from the company get into my personal checking account? Do I just make note of the amount, transfer the funds, and tell my tax preparer? Confused and Red Hook. And that's from Michael.
Well, the S Corp might be a great strategy. I mean, because it falls into what we call these pass-through entities. The entity partnerships, S corporations, don't pay tax themselves. The income flows through and is reported on the individual return.
So this is for small business.
This is for small business, and again, but we've got some businesses that are S corporations and partnerships that have seven-figure net income. So small is a relative term, it's closely held. The S corporation, a couple of things. One, there's going to be a separate tax return that's due for that, and that return is due March 15th.
Mm.
The S corporation return, you generate what we call a Form K-1. That reports out to the shareholder of the company. Here's the net income that you have from the business that you have to report on your individual return.
All right. Our number here is 800-348-2551. We go now to Scott in Queensbury. Scott.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call today.
Sure.
I filed my taxes, both federal and state, with TurboTax, which I've done every year, but I have a problem in that. My 22-year-old daughter was at college last year, but she also did an internship. So she lived on her own essentially from the month of May until December. So I misunderstood because we had paid some tuition for her. I thought she was still to be considered a dependent. But when she went to file her taxes, they said we'd already used her number as a dependent, and we really shouldn't have, according to the information she had. So I did go on TurboTax to file an amended return, and I understand I need to do the same for the New York State as well. And it said on the TurboTax that the forms aren't available yet, and I have to wait until March when they become available. My question is, can an amended return be filed online, or do I need to wait and mail everything in? I also will have to send some refund checks back in because we got our refunds back from both the Fed and the state electronically.
Okay.
So typically you need to do the returns electronically. It's difficult now to file on paper, and there's a lot of mandating, particularly on the preparer front where we are, to file electronically. Certainly that expedites things as well and makes it a little cleaner. But it sounds It sounds like, did you say she graduated last May?
She actually graduated in December. But she was in college last year, but she actually was at an internship all summer, and she lived on her own and supported herself and paid for her fall tuition herself.
So she provided more than half of her support. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, you're going to probably have to wait and file an amended return on paper, and then she may not be able to file electronically. She may have to file hers on paper because the system might not allow her to claim herself as independent because your return is already in the system.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so after our amended return goes in, that will change the information. So then if she follows her return after ours is received, our amended return, then she should be all set, though.
Yeah, and you may have an issue with timing. I mean, again, what I would probably be inclined to do is, and it's a bit of a hassle because of, as I said, TurboTax is so easy now to be able to file some of this stuff. But you may want to try to prepare her return and submit it manually because it's going to take a while for you to get an amended return into the IRS and then get in it processed.
I see. Okay. Thank you so very much.
Thanks a lot. Why wouldn't the forms be available right away? Why would he have to wait for the forms?
Well, the issue with him is that if an original return is submitted with a Social Security number, and so, for example, she claims...
No, I got it. Yeah. But he said he had to wait for the amended return forms to be ready. Why would they not be ready?
Well, primarily this year, because if when you look at the form that generated this year and stuff, it looks totally different.
Yeah.
And so the amended return hasn't been processed yet to reflect that. I mean, they're not anticipating an amended 2018 return because the 18 returns are just starting to go in.
They've had the whole year to work on the forms. I mean, what do they do? All right, here, let's go back to
They weren't working the whole time.
Well, you make a point. Ann in Kingston. Ann, you're on.
Yes, I had a quick question about the deductible part of self-employment. That tax, is that still available for people?
Yes, that is still available for you. Yes.
Okay, and will it still affect your gross? Is it an adjustment to the income? Is it all the same as it was last year?
Yeah, your Form 1040 is completely redesigned in its presentation. So where you're used to seeing it on the bottom of page one, it's going to be in a different place. But certainly that adjustment is now reported and it's available to you on Schedule 1.
Oh, great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot. And the number here is 800-348-2551. Jim Cole and Judy Cahey of BST are here to answer your tax preparation questions. And Julie in Kingston is next. Julie.
Hi there. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And we love you, right? Thank you.
We
sold an insurance and a policy that we had for years and immediately rolled it over to buy another, but a different one. So we were told we didn't need to pay taxes on that, but how do we show that on our when we file our taxes? Is there a rollover form, please?
Well, generally, in those, when you surrender a policy or do what they call a Section 1035 exchange, that's rolling one insurance policy into another. If it's done properly, what you would end up getting is probably a 1099-R that would show the life insurance proceeds as a gross amount, and then it would show taxable amount zero in code.
Correct. We got that.
Yeah. Yes. So that just goes into your how are you preparing your return?
H&R Block online. We're
okay.
Doing it ourselves.
Okay. Yeah, so you just follow the directions for the reporting of the 1099-R and put the proper codings in there. What you should see is you should see it showing up, as gross income to the left, but then in the taxable income column, it'll be zero.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Julie. And over to Patrick and Rhinebeck. Patrick, you're on.
Hi, I have two children, teenagers in high school, summer jobs, both earning less than $3,000. Do we have to file for them or do they have to file? Is there a recommendation and does it affect the FAFSA forms for looking at colleges?
So the earned income threshold right now to have to file at the federal level is $12,000. But New York State doesn't conform to that. It's a lesser number, so bear with me just a moment.
Okay.
Do they have any withholding on those wages?
No, they both filed exempt, and I think,
okay.
Exempt.
Okay, she's looking it up.
Yeah, so I think if it's under the state threshold, that was around $2,800.
Yeah, it's roughly about $3,000 is the threshold. So you'd want to double-check that number for New York State to see if that triggers a filing requirement.
But if it's under both thresholds, then you don't have to file for them. It is most likely still income that would be reportable on the FASA.
Okay.
And then for filing just state, do you recommend doing an online, or is it still old school paper where they could submit it with their Social Security numbers, or can it be done with our accountant for my wife and I?
Well, it's going to be a separate return if one's needed, but I think some of the software will allow it to be done fairly easily online.
I don't think the state takes paper returns anymore, do they?
Yes, they have to.
Do they?
The requirement for e-filing certainly, is required of all the professional preparers.
Okay.
So your filing threshold for your child for 2018 is $3,100 for New York.
$3,100. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
If it's under that, then let's say $3,000 mm-hmm. is lumped into you, the parents' income, or it's just not there at all?
Not there at all.
Yeah. If it's earned income, as Judy was saying, it's not taxable. If that was unearned income, then they might be, subject to some federal tax.
Gotcha. All right. Over to Ron in Saratoga. Ron.
Hi, folks.
Hello.
Thanks for having me. 18 was a big year for me. I had sold an inherited residence and then sold my primary residence and then purchased a new one. Can you give me an idea of what the implications of that might be?
Yeah, so you got a couple different things going on there, obviously, as you said. So let's take them, I think, in the order that I heard it. So the inherited house, so depending on the timing, how long ago you inherited it, but your what we call the tax basis in that house would be the fair market value at the time that you inherited it. So if the house was worth $200,000 when you inherited it, and it really hasn't changed much, and you sell it for $200,000, you're going to end up with no taxable gain on there. You may have to report the transaction. They may give you at the closing, uh-huh. they may give you a 1099-S. That shows the sales proceeds, but the inherited property, okay. You get this basis step up.
Who determines the fair market value?
Well, it used to be on your estate tax return that you file, but with the increased thresholds, there's fewer and fewer people that even have to file. So some of it is a question of documentation. One thing is timing. So let's say if I inherited this property 6 months ago and I sold it today, I would be probably fairly comfortable in saying that the selling price and the fair market value were one and the same. If this was 10 years ago, then yeah, I need to probably try to figure out what was the value at the time.
It was 3 years. Value was recorded at that time as we, calculated the estate from my parents.
Yeah, then that'll be your basis in that property, at least at the time that you inherited it, and any additions that you made. Of course, you'd have the selling expenses. Most likely, right. You can't take if it turned out to be a loss because of selling expenses, most likely you wouldn't be able to take that because they would treat that most likely as a personal asset, not as an investment asset. The sale of your primary residence, how long have you been in the house?
Oh, 19 years.
Yeah. All right. So you you file a joint return?
No.
All right. So there's a $250,000 gain exclusion on the sale of your primary residence. That's $500,000 for a joint.
Oh.
Yeah, so.
That's good news.
Yeah. So it's quite possible that on neither of those items that you might end up with any adverse tax consequences.
Ooh, Thank you.
All right, Ron.
Worth the call.
Thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop, and we talk taxes today with Judy Cahey and Jim Cole of BST. Let's go to Deb in Niskayuna. Deb.
Hi. I have a question about my daughter. She's last year was her first full year of working out of graduate school, and she worked everything she could and made significantly more money than she will this year because now she has a regular full-time job with benefits. And I was wondering, considering she made hardly any money while she was in graduate school, is there any income averaging or anything she can do to reduce her tax burden?
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Deb.
Hello?
Yeah, hello.
Hello, I'm here.
Hi, go ahead.
Oh, I thought I was talking, sorry.
No, you were.
Okay. I was just wondering if there's anything she can do to reduce her tax burden. I remember my father years ago had a separation settlement, and he could income average over several years because that one year was a significant bump in their income. So I was just wondering, is there anything like that still available and how she would find out about it?
Unfortunately, not. We as taxpayers typically pay on a calendar year basis and on a cash method. So unfortunately, there's no ability to average last year with this year to try to modify or reduce the tax burden.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Deb. Number here is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop today. It's all your tax questions. And Mary in Middletown. Mary.
Hi. My daughter's a senior in high school, and the school offers college courses, but I have to pay the reduced rate for the credits. Is that something that I can use in my taxes as a deduction? Or
there's a couple of credits you could take a look at. The American Opportunity comes to mind. That's for undergraduate coursework. But I think that you are going to run afoul of that because I think she needs to be at least a half-time student to get there. And how many credits is she taking?
Well, for the whole school year, she'll graduate with 28. She's taken, I think, 14 credits each semester, each half of the school year?
It's got to be close.
Yeah, I would definitely take a look at that American Opportunity credit. And again, there's some income thresholds in there as well, but her attendance in that undergraduate, as long as it's deemed at least half-time in the degree program, she might be able to get there. I'm not sure.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Mary. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, and now we go to Teresa in Albany. Hi, Teresa.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. My husband and I own a second house, which was my deceased mother-in-law's, which we'd like to sell. It's not technically an inheritance because she put my husband's name on the a while before. So I guess the deed. But I'm concerned about tax implications. Is there any way to shelter the profit from the house and not be hit with big taxes? You know, could we buy something else, or is it automatically, it's just like straight up?
So this is a little bit challenging because when you are gifted a house, you get that person's basis. So whatever the parent's basis was in that house becomes what basically your cost basis is today if you were to sell it, right? So your recognition event is the difference between what you sell it for and what that number is. And it's challenging, right? Because I don't know if you heard the previous caller with the question about primary sale of residence. This isn't your primary residence. So you don't have that same ability to exclude the gain on the sale of a second home.
Okay.
Yeah, I would definitely explore the fact pattern, though, of how your husband, you know, is on the title and stuff. Because sometimes people will add a child to a bank account or to an asset account as a way to just facilitate a transfer upon death. And you may be able to determine, or you may be able to look at to see whether or not there's a fact pattern of, was it actually a gift Did your mother-in-law remain on the title until her death?
She did.
Yeah. Then
yes, she did.
Then I would probably talk to maybe the attorney who's handling, you know, the closing of that. You may have an argument that she never really gifted the house to her son, but merely put his name on there so when she died it would pass to him directly.
Okay. All right, I'll look into that. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thanks, Teresa. Let's take a break here. Judy Cahy and Jim Cole are here from BST in Albany. They're helping you with your tax questions. You know, April 15th, it's very close now. We'll be back with a home stretch. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. It's 800-348-2551 if you want to call in. And, oh, what a popular pair of people we have on this program today. The lines are loaded. And here are about four or five emails that we'll try to blast through very quickly. This one is from Janice in Cooperstown. Janice writes, if I don't get a 1099 for little jobs that pay anywhere between $100 and $400 a month, do I still have to declare this income?
Yes.
Okay. That's all? That's all you want to say? There's no workaround? Okay.
She may have expenses against it and so forth, but, I mean, income is income, whether it's reported to you or not.
Okay. Well, how do they check if it's not reported?
That's why, underground.
You're not going to give us anything here. All right.
I got a professional license here. Yeah.
This one's from Ryan. I have an eBay and a Facebook account on which I sell used media and collectibles. What should I be worried about as far as collecting taxes or claiming sales? Is there a limit? Can I counterbalance it with what I spend at yard sales at flea markets for the product? And that's from Ryan. So we sell stuff.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things there. I mean, if it rises to the level of a trader business, and quite frankly, even if you sell something on eBay and make a profit on it, technically, that's, again, everything is taxable income unless it's excluded by law, and that would not be excluded.
Okay.
Beyond that, though, it gets into a question of is it a quote kind of a business or is it a hobby? And for tax purposes, you do not want to be a hobby. One, you can't deduct losses. Two, all of your income is taxable, and then all of your deductions for your hobby are not deductible.
No.
Directly against the income. So.
Okay. This one's from Alex in Latham. I recently graduated from college, and my question is, if you can deduct the interest from student loans, does it make a difference, federal or private? And that's from Alex in Latham.
Certainly, yes. There is a threshold to deduct that interest, but it's quite small. So give me just a moment.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
You tested my knowledge.
Well, that's all right. I'm glad you're here to look things up. Do you want me to move on to the next one while you look that one
up? Certainly.
Yeah,
give me another one.
This one's from James. I am retired and with odd jobs and social security, I make about $17,000 a year. My wife still works, makes about $45,000 a year. Are there any basic guidelines whether to file separately or together with those totals?
The general rule, what we see is that the married filing jointly has a tendency to work out slightly better. I haven't seen enough of it with the new law. In the old law, you had odd fact situations where one spouse had a lot of medical expenses and the other didn't. That splitting up.
Yeah.
But when there's when there's different incomes, usually combining works.
All right. So do you have the answer to
this question? I have the answer.
Let me recap the question. A person recently graduated from college wants to know if you can deduct interest from student loans and does it make a difference between federal and private?
So the short answer is I'm presuming he's single. It'd be between $65,000 and $80,000 of income. So as long as his gross income isn't higher than $65,000 to $80,000, there's a deduction. The private versus not doesn't
okay.
matter.
This one's from James. The subject heading is W-4s. I'm a 31-year-old with no debt at all, and as I always have to pay state and federal, a coworker suggested to change my W-4s to take more taxes out of my paycheck so I don't pay as much or maybe get a refund at the end of the year. Does that even matter? Wouldn't the amount I pay to the government be the same whether it's taken out of my paycheck or paying it at the end of the year?
Yeah, Yeah, your withholding is just a mechanism for paying it over time. You know, it doesn't change your income tax liability.
All right, this one, and it's the last email, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one's from Mark. I have a person, if a person is in a situation where they haven't filed their taxes for the past few years and they want to get caught up, should they first file the oldest return proceeding in chronological order, or should they start with last year and work their way backwards?
I would recommend altogether. I mean, here's the problem. When you don't file a return, you don't have a statute of limitations running. So that problem isn't going away.
Right.
And what you do in 1 year rolls forward and has implications on the next. So I think, obviously, sequentially, you'd want to start with the earliest, but you have to get all those prepared and filed and get them in an envelope.
The only caveat I would say is if for some reason they didn't think they were going to get all of this done by April 15th, file the 2018 timely.
Get that done and then worry about the ones.
And work on the other ones.
You know, if they haven't caught you in 6 years, should you just go buy a bunker in Idaho and hide out? I guess you can't answer that question. All right, let's go to Philippe and Brewster. Hello, Philippe and Brewster.
Hello. I recently found an email that my business received from another business which had paid my business last year, and they wanted my taxpayer ID and all that. And I'm wondering if I've passed the deadline without penalty, or what should I do?
Say that again, please. You have an email with a taxpayer. You had unreported income?
No, I think they had a transaction you had somebody who either that you did services for, and they're looking for your tax ID number so that they can file probably a 1099 to you.
Yes.
They were right. In theory, that was supposed to happen. They were supposed to, you know, file. Well, they're supposed to file that with the government by February 28th. That may be why they're contacting you now. They just realized it. They were supposed to give you the 1099. All the other recipients were supposed to get their 1099s by January 31st.
Yeah. So what do you suggest I do? Just send it as soon as I can?
Yes.
Yeah, you're helping
him.
You're helping them comply.
Okay, thanks, Philippe. We appreciate it. Over to George in Middletown. George.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
So I had my initial question was, are there any changes to the Schedule C? But now I just printed out the 1040, and of course it looks way different. I was stunned. And so if you're normally filling out the Schedule C, what 1040 form or forms do you have to use?
So the Schedule C is still in play, and there's not a lot of changes going on with that. So what I would add to the conversation, though, for you is, you know, if you're self-employed, you want to take a look this year at one of the new changes, and that's the qualified business income, the pass-through deduction, the 20%. Depending on what you do and depending on what your income thresholds are, there's a lot of requirements and calculations in there, but certainly you'd want to take a look at that from your business standpoint. But the good news is Schedule C itself doesn't look as changed as the 1040 does.
Okay, and then for the SE, the Social Security, that's the same form, but where does that go on the 1040?
It comes back to Schedule 4, I believe. Right? Line 57, Schedule 4.
This is why you got to move away from paper and into technology, because let the system transfer. But we can't understate what Judy was saying on that qualified business income deduction. It's because it's if you
qualified
don't if you,
business income deduction. Thank you.
Yeah, it's on line 9, I think. But it's but potentially for self-employed Schedule C's, for partners, S corp shareholders, there's an ability for maybe upward of a 20% deduction of your business income. So it's a
uh-huh.
big item. Big potential savings.
Good.
All right. Good luck, George.
Okay, well, you've been a help. Thank you a lot.
Thank you very much. And now it's time for Paul in Clifton Park. Paul.
Yes, thank you. I am a resident of Utah. I work there full time. And in 2019, I expect to have a pretty giant-sized income. But in 2019, I'm going to be working in New York State, where I intend to file a state return and probably make less than $10,000 in New York, but may make several hundred thousand in Utah. So my question is, if I pay the tax in Utah and I make a giant income there, will the state of New York tax my giant income in Utah?
They shouldn't. But again, this comes down to making sure that your domicile and your residence is still in Utah. If you're a Utah resident just doing some work and have New York source income, then New York, the only thing they can tax you on is the New York sourced income. Now, when New York does that computation, they'll take into account all of your other income to figure out kind of where you are in the tax bracket world and tax you not just as if you were living in New York and only making $10,000, which you might not pay anything. They'll say, okay, if you're making $10,000 in New York, but you make $120,000 in total, we're going to tax that $10,000 based on the level. Now,
at a higher rate.
Yeah, well, probably at a higher rate than Utah will, and
yeah,
and then
a
on
fair
your
bet.
And then on your Utah return, you'll report all of your income, including the New York income, but then you'll get to take a partial credit for the New York state taxes against your Utah credit or your Utah taxes.
Okay, and then one final bit of information is the giant income in Utah will be capital gains. Does that matter?
No. I mean, either way, it's still going to work through the computation. I mean, obviously, the capital gain will be at a lower tax rate for federal purposes. It doesn't matter if the state doesn't have a different rate here. I'm not quite sure about Utah, but I'm thinking not.
It's about 5%.
Yeah, but as far as a different capital gain ordinary rate.
No.
But...
All right. Well, good luck, Paul.
Thank you very much.
Yep, good luck with your hundreds of thousands of dollars this year. And let's go to Sue in Valencia. Sue.
Hi, I had a unique year last year, and that last February I went out with a disability because of a back injury. I am currently receiving long-term disability from my employer and Social Security, but there was a six-month waiting period where I had no income whatsoever. I work in Massachusetts, live in New York State. I haven't looked at the tax forms yet, but is there anything special I should do or be aware of when filing for last year?
Yeah, you're going to have a couple of things there. I mean, you know, the disability, if the disability income is from an employer-sponsored plan, then it's still taxable income. Did they report it on a W-2 to you or?
Yes.
Yeah, all right. So that's still going to be, it sounds like it's going to be Massachusetts sourced income. You're still going to file a Massachusetts return like you maybe have done in the past with your Massachusetts
yep.
wages, but and then that income flows through to your home state as well, with then a credit against with the Massachusetts taxes paid on that income. Overall, it certainly sounds
special.
Like your income.
There's nothing special that doesn't count as unemployment because I couldn't collect during that time. All of that.
No, again, I think employer-sponsored disability is taxable income. I mean, your income will be down, but
I'm talking about the 6 months when I had no income. That was the big hurt right there.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, well, thank you for that information.
Thanks, Sue. And now let's go to Sergio in Colony.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about the difference between filing married jointly versus married separately. If I file married separately, my wife has an IRA deduction. We lose that. And also, if let's say we file separately, if I wanted to claim the child tax credit, do I lose that also?
It's difficult to have the fact pattern married filing separate work out to your advantage. I mean, is there an issue why you wouldn't file joint? I mean, they've corrected a little bit of the issue with the standard deduction being half and some other things in the tax law. But in general, it's usually advantageous to file a married filing joint return.
Okay, that's what I seem to be finding out. No matter, we did get the additional $12,000 deduction, but we also lose the credits. And is it true? I don't have the tax tables in front of me, but is it true that we're taxed at a higher rate if we file married separately than if let's say I was single?
There is an interplay in the rates, and again, they've corrected this a little bit this year with the adjustments, but. There is definitely, particularly at the higher brackets, where you'd pay a little bit different.
Yeah, for the most part, now the married filing separate tax rates run somewhat coinciding with the single.
They are. Yeah. Okay, so I'm trying to work both sides of this, and it just doesn't seem that there's any benefit really to marry file it separately.
No, generally there's not. I mean, most of the situations that we see, it's for financial reasons. It's sometimes in marital breakdown situations.
Right.
More times than not, again, the joint return will one is just one less return to do. But for the most part, from a tax standpoint, often works out better.
All right, quickly over to Victor in Westerlo. Victor.
Very quickly, I bought a new house in 2018, first-time home buyer. I'm curious as far as, like, what can I use as far as, like, tax deductions? I had to put a new furnace in. I had to repair a foundation wall, put a new garage in. Is there anything I can, claim or anything like that? Or
so in home ownership, there's a couple of things you want to look at. One is your property taxes. One is your interest. Now, keep in mind, with the new laws, the standard deduction has gone up significantly. So those deductions may not result in you actually using them if their standard deduction is a little bit higher. On the repair side, the capital improvement side, the that ends up going, particularly to the bigger investments into the basis of your home, right? So if you do a new furnace or you do a new roof, right, or you work on the doing a new foundation, you keep track of that. Now, granted, when you sell the house, if you've lived in it 2 out of 5 years, there's an ability to exclude the gain up to $500,000, which is a pretty substantial number. It didn't used to be that way.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, certainly keep track of the bigger dollars you put into that home.
All right, Victor, that is where we will have to leave it. Judy Cahey and Jim Cole, how do people find out about BST?
Easiest place is online at BSTCO.com.
BSTCO.com.
Yep.
Well, thank you both for being here. Support comes from the Hyde Collection in Glens Falls, celebrating 60s America, proud, photogenic, and caught on film in Colorama from the George Eastman Museum, HydeCollection.org. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing. Full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Fisher Ferry General Store, offering freshly prepared food and eclectic gift items. Open Thursday through Sunday. FisherFerryGeneralStore.com. Gather, shop, eat. And the University at Albany Theater Program, presenting Our Country's Good, a drama about the first convict colony and the redemptive power of theater and art. March 7th through 10th, albany.edu/theater. Thanks again to Judy Cahey and Jim Cole of BST for being with us today. Thank you for listening. Some really great calls today. We appreciate them very much. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. We also appreciate Zach very much. Amber Sickles answered the calls today. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Stand by for news.